the Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
We're delighted to be able to welcome as our next guest to Business Matters, the Managing Director, of course, of a fabulous firm without which probably the agricultural industry in Lincoln would perhaps collapse conceivably, certainly in terms of the mechanics and the wonderful things which it actually provides. Of course, we're talking about NY Tractor Parts, and we're talking about the Managing Director of NY Tractor Parts. That's James Young. How are you, James?
Good, thank you, Alex. Thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. And I have to say that on an annual basis at the Lincolnshire Show, I'm always impressed by the level of machinery that you actually get out there. And some might say it was a hyperbole to actually introduce you with the notion that without guys such as yourself, the industry would collapse. But you do provide an essential service, really, for the agricultural field, do you not?
Yes. Yeah, we do. I mean, it's, I never thought about it in that way before, but I suppose we do. We are, in a very short sentence, we supply new, used and rebuild spare parts for tractors. So if you think about it hard enough, there are some parts that we offer that no one else does. So in a sense, we are keeping old things going. So yes, some things would actually ground to a halt without us, but it's something you don't really consider until someone like yourself, who's not in the industry, gives you that alternate point of view.
NY Tractor Parts, of course, stands for Nick Young Tractor Parts.
It does, yes, he is my father.
I just wanted to confirm that there was a connection with respect to that whole side of things there. Looking at the website, of course, we can see a lot of John Deere material. Is that because you prefer John Deere as opposed to Massey Ferguson, or is it a case of, what the hey, give us the tractor, we'll deal with it?
I would say 98% of what we do is John Deere. If you ask why, the story is somewhat vague. However, Dad, my father, ran a previous business with another business partner that came to an end for various reasons. And when he decided to go on his own in 96, what the business he was in before was similar to this, but it was everything, not just John Deere. And my dad decided that John Deere was the growing interest at the time, and he picked the right brand at the right time. Because pretty much since then, for the past 25 years, within Western Europe, John Deere has been the market leader in terms of new machinery and new tractors. And at times, we've considered moving to other brands or specialising in other brands, and it is something that is on our radar now. That's maybe for later. But we've been able to grow with that one brand. So if you're in a lane that's delivering results, why change? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that's really been the conscious decision, and it, and up until now it's proved successful. So that's why we're in the line of John Deere. So that's not, there are other few. So occasionally if someone we know wants another part, obviously we're not going to say no to them, but what we're known as within our industry is John Deere.
Now, the company itself has been going for a few decades now and obviously successful from that perspective. Was this something that, as a family-run business set in the heart of rural Lincolnshire, you'd always intended to actually follow in your father's footsteps, or were there moments where you thought, no, I want to go off and become a Hollywood actor?
Definitely not one. I never, ever intended to join the family business. So my personal journey is various. When I left school, I'll try and keep it as short as possible. When I left school, my original plan was to be a naval officer. I made a decision I didn't want to work in farming. Not really from a farming background per se. My dad was an engineer by trade. I didn't grow up on a farm. That's always the assumption everyone thinks, is that you must be a farmer. Well, I'm not. But anyway,
but surely everybody in Lincolnshire, we're farmers, are we not? I thought that was a Lincolnshire thing, really.
Well, I mean, if you want to get a bit pedantic, we're all farmers at some point in our history, unless you're the Duke of Rutland or the Duchess, or technically they are farmers because they're landowners. So I suppose unless you're the king, you're pretty much, and he's a farmer, because I have a story about that, about, well, it's about Prince Philip. That's another story, but because we have sold to Sandringham Estate. So we were all farmers at one time in our lives. But again, that's the thing about Lincolnshire, is that there is a bit more to it than just farms, as you well know. But anyway, I digress. Naval officer, got to the last level of selection, didn't make the cut, and went through a period of not knowing what I wanted to do. Had a notion of being a banker, so I went and did a finance degree up in Newcastle at university. When I came out of university, it was 2011. This was during the credit crunch, and obviously banking jobs were not most common. And having done a bit of mini internships, the industry wasn't quite what I thought. So it was 2011. My dad had a small little business that was earning him a decent living, and I thought, well, I'll go work for him for a couple of years and wait till all this blows over once Lehman Brothers is, and RBS sort themselves out, and I'll get back into it. And here I am, what, 12, 13 years later. So no, it was, my journey was an example of doing everything you can to not work in the family business, but ending up working in it. And now I'm glad of that opportunity.
Your first choice of music takes us back to the heady days of rock and roll. It's Led Zeppelin. And indeed, they're going to be performing rock and roll. Any reasons for this?
This, when you asked me these three songs, I've struggled more about picking these three songs than anything else probably in my life.
We always like to feel business matters can be a bit challenging, James. So
exactly.
That's always good.
And full disclosure, I'm actually not a huge Led Zeppelin fan. People may hate me, I may get hate mail, but I think they're a bit overrated. However, if you want to define a song which is rock and roll, this is the song. And there's a few others that of my generation, that of my age, that I would contend with it. But this song to me is, if you were to put it in a dictionary, if you were to give an alien what is rock and roll, this is the song. So whilst I'm not a huge Led Zeppelin fan, with this song, they define the genre.
Yeah.
You're listening to Business Matters on Siren Radio, and our special guest, of course, Managing Director of NYE Tractors, that's James Young. James, you shared with us your background in terms of how you came into the business and into the industry. Generally, agriculture in Britain has had a bit of a patchy history. I mean, there are lots of sort of challenges with respect to that, not least of which, obviously, was the thing called Brexit, which emerged recently. You may have heard of it, I'm sure. Has that proven to be challenging? Has that proven to be a case of it's provided opportunities? I mean, basically what I'm asking you, James, is the glass half full or half empty as we sit here towards the end of 2023?
You would ask my dad, he would say glass half empty. To ask me, my heart says empty and my head says full. Brexit in the short term has been a major nuisance. A lot of our business is overseas, although we're based in Lincolnshire, we're based in a farming area. In 2019, 55% of our business was overseas. And of that 55%, I'd say only 8% of that was actually EU. Most of our export was USA, South America, Asia, Australia, New Zealand. So in that respect, it hasn't affected us too much in that respect. However, our core export strategy pre-Brexit, and this hasn't changed, was we were dealing with lots of European factories producing European-made goods, which were high quality, and a lot were they sold into John Deere as well, so they were original. It's like buying a Louis Vuitton bag direct from the factory. We were doing a lot of that. We were legally allowed to do this, and we were buying these things in Europe and then selling them into, say, USA. We sell in 70 countries. But that hasn't changed. However, it now takes longer and costs more. So we can still import it and we can still be somewhat competitive, but now we're having to pay an extra 3 or 4% to get it here. And whereas before we could just send things like we would do around the corner, we've got to manage it correctly because the way that the free trade deal works is there's always nuance to it, and country of origin does matter, but there's a bit of caveats to that, and so we have to sort of do tricks and sort of loopholes to get around without paying some duty, and then it's the extra cost. And for example, I mentioned before, a big part of our business is rebuilt. So we have a whole division that repairs engines and gearboxes. And before, we would sell a lot to Europe. So a repaired gearbox tracked us down. Obviously, rather than repair it, we just send them a complete repaired gearbox and they send the old one back. Now, the rigmarole trying to re-import the broken gearbox is just... I don't want to bore you. I could be here for 30 minutes recounting it all. But so without trying to get too political, we so far from our point, we've lost a lot and gained nothing. Now, that's my glass half empty side. The glass half full is, as a company which exports a lot around the world and I've travelled extensively, I agree with some of the rhetoric that there is a whole world out there to be had. But we can't escape geography, and it's all well and good. And I work with the Business Department of Trade, and I'm an export champion. So I go and do talks for various businesses. So I know people within the government department well, and I say this to them: it's all well and good having trade deals, and yes, I encourage the government to keep doing that with the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade deals, but a trade deal is one thing, but it's having the appetite and the will to actually go to these places. Like, to give you some context, Australia is a key market that we're targeting. I went there last year for 3 weeks and I drove 3,000 miles by myself. And that's what you have to do. Just because you have a trade deal doesn't just mean that all of a sudden you get business. You still have to go out there, see people, find people, and have that. Now, within a single market, you're basically like it's selling to Wales or Scotland or to Norfolk. We treated the EU as a domestic market, and now And once you're used to that, it's very hard to go back to treating it as a bona fide export market. And once you've had freedom, it's very hard to, and freedom in an economic sense, not talking politically, but in an economic sense, it's very hard to go back. And I will quickly end this monologue by saying this. I was at a meeting with, again, some business department people, and I'll paraphrase what they said, but it's their belief. And I do believe them that within, and I think the phrase was, within 10 to 20 years, we will have renegotiated ourselves a position within the EU where it's more manageable. And I can believe that because Switzerland did it, and to an extent Norway did it. But how much proverbial blood will be spilt to get to that point? That's what worries me. So it is a challenge and we're working through it. But so far, the benefits have yet to be seen. But with my age, I'm trying to be positive and try and make the best of it. But it's hard when you deal with arbitrary rules and regulations. And to quickly end it, sorry, I'm not carried on. What I've learned from this process is the EU is not one institution; it's 27, and they all apply the 27. All 27 nations apply the rules differently. So it's not one institution, despite what some politicians may say. It's very much 27 individual ones, and they all interpret what Brussels says. And it's, yeah, I'm positive, but who knows where we will be in 5, 10 years' time.
Well, maybe what we need is for North Owersby to declare its independence and actually go its own way as a village from that point of view. Obviously, you're based in North Owersby. And one of the things which certainly struck me in terms of the About Us sequence is your personal attention to detail and strong after-sales service. Is that something where, in terms of customer care, NY Tractor Parts really does shine out? And is it something which both your father and yourself are very keen to manifest that you do? I mean, you've said how many miles you travel just in terms of Australia, but is that something which you would maintain is actually essential to enable the actual business to continue to grow?
It is. There's two ways of looking at it. The first way is most historically, as in like the car industry, you have your dealership, and within the dealership, you'll have your parts department. Obviously, most people don't tend to go there because as long as your car doesn't go wrong, the rules generally apply within the farming industry. So you have your John Deere dealer, your Massey Ferguson dealer, they'll have the sales team and the service and the parts. So obviously, because we just do parts, we're very specialist. And because of what I'm trying to say is that because we are just in the business of selling parts, we can't rely on selling new machinery to generate revenue. We have to, let's say, work a bit harder. So how we separate that is, I like to call ourselves the special forces. We have some very knowledgeable people here who worked in the industry. Obviously, my dad himself, he's a Yoda of the industry within what he knows. And so the service is having the knowledge that others don't have, and because we can't rely on anything else in part sales, we have to go a bit further to make it happen. And also what's kind of developed over the past 5, 10 years, you may be familiar, Alex, about the whole right to repair legislation that's doing a lot of movement around the US especially, and a little bit in Europe. And we try to be at the vanguard of that, shall we say, where we are trying to show, as far as ag technology has got more and more complicated and more electronic, and farmers are famously parochial, that we're trying to show them that you don't need to go to the main dealer to repair these things, and there isn't that you can do it yourself. And yes, sometimes you need a specialist help, but there's plenty of independent workshops that can do it for you. But we're slowly in the process of creating, we're in the very early stages of creating what we're calling a knowledge center, where at some point next year, I'd say now, obviously, we're going to put out a lot of content on how to repair your own tractor, and it will be free. Obviously with it behind a sign up wall, but it will be free, completely free at the point of use, because for us, we have to separate ourselves from the main dealer because they've got that manufacturer's backup, and we have to do something extra and special to separate ourselves. So within that context, but then to kind of slightly counteract that, we're also in a very unique position where people really come to us because they need us. we're not selling t-shirts or even selling mobile phones where we have to convince people to come into our store to buy it, because there's lots of other choices. You don't buy an engine for a tractor unless you need an engine. No farmer puts an engine on the shelf. Obviously, a lot of our businesses is a repair shop, repair and workshops, and they will stock a few things, but no workshop stocks an engine. So we're in a very, unlike many businesses, or not many, but most businesses, where they're coming to us, so we can kind of dictate the terms of it as well. So whilst I say that we do help people, we also can be quite abrupt, because if they want us to save them money, which we do, they have to play by our rules. So we're kind of lucky that we don't have a lot of competition. We're a very niche business, so we have a bit of indirect competition, but we don't have a lot of competition, and we're able to set the terms. So that's another reason why I like this industry, is I'm not having to compete against big organizations and try to really push the marketing. We're able to get people to come to us on our terms and help them. But sometimes you have to educate them in order to help them.
Is there such a thing as a typical day in your life, James? Or is it a case of, well, you know, I can be chock-a-block with meetings one day, the next day I've got media commitments, then I've got other sort of aspects to work through, then I've got a jet flight to Australia? Or is it a case of, well, you know, there is a certain rhythm to the year?
If this industry is very, very hard to predict. It cycles are much longer than others. You don't work in year, the recessions in the farming industry don't work like I call city recessions. They work in 5, 10, 20 year cycles. They have mini ones within that, but really the weather dictates how things work. And so you're kind of responding to how the weather is. So within a business, if it's dry, we tend to be quiet, even this time of year, maybe not this time of year. And when it's wet, they're on the phone. In terms of my day to day, you really summed it up. There isn't an average day. There is, some days there's, flying to America or flying to Australia, and the next day it's doing a talk with Department of Business and Trade about advising them on Chinese trade policy. The next day it's meeting with the accountant. At the moment we're going through a big growth plan phase, so we're pretty much constantly recruiting. So on Thursday we're having a sort of a discovery session for a sales job. We're looking for a marketing person. So one day, and that's what I like about the job. And then one day you'll have some of our second hand, you'll be buying from salvage yards. There's a salvage auction, so maybe going to an auction. You'd asked me this question 5 years ago, and I told you there is a very, very set repetition. It was sat near the phone dealing with sales when I was more on the coal face. But as the business has grown and changed, when I joined, there was four of us, and now there's 18 of us. So the business has changed. The sales I don't really get involved with, besides a few overseas customers. So my day-to-day now is just overseeing things and making sure the people we put in charge are delivering the way we want, and then looking for new opportunities to push the growth that we're planning.
And very much a success story under the SME or small medium enterprise lines from that point of view, which I suspect having under 500 employees is probably where you'd sit in terms of the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
Let's talk the Smiths and Morrissey, and please, 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 please let me get what I want. Any reasons for this one?
I'm a huge Smiths fan, and I was again vacillating massively over this, and I've always said this about this song, is that there's only one flaw with this song, is that it's too short. And if it was longer, I mean, the perfect song doesn't exist, but I think this song is nearly the nearest thing to as perfect as you can get, because we've all been through life where, Morrissey has an ability to write lyrics like no one else, in my opinion, and he's a way to convey emotion. And we all have that time in our life where we want something so badly, and it could be something as small as the chocolate bar or something big, but we all go through that emotion of when you don't get what you want, and that rejection. And that's why it always it just thought it would seem appropriate by in this moment.
Good times for a change. See, the look I've had can make a good man turn bad. So please, 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 let me get what I want this time. Haven't had a dream in a long time. See, the life I've had can make a good man bad. So for once in my life, let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time. Lord knows it would be the first time.
We are talking to the managing director of NY Tractors. Just got the whole thing. NY Tractor Parts. Exactly. That's exactly so. That's James Young. The county of Lincolnshire, of course, is renowned for the Lincolnshire Show. Regular Siren Radio, we attend the Lincolnshire Show. We're delighted to do that. Obviously, they've had some changes in terms of their personnel these days, a new chief executive. Obviously, it's taken over from Jane Southall, who did a sterling job for many a year. One of the things I noticed over the last couple of decades of the Lincolnshire Show is it's really an essential way of getting together within the Lincolnshire area for not just the agricultural industry, but all the kind of sides of things that are actually there. In fact, probably with the closure of the Christmas market, it's probably the big event that the county very much is at the heart of. Is the Lincolnshire Show an important exhibition place for you, or is it more kind of contact base? Is it something which you feel is an essential part of ensuring that the balance between the public and their understanding of what goes on in agriculture and so on is balanced by a chance to actually, you know, chat and share other happenings within the industry itself?
Full disclosure, we've never had a stall at Lincolnshire Show, and that's mainly for the reason that, because we're a specialist. Historically, if you were to ask farmers what the county shows were about, they were about, you went to the dealer once a year and you got a free lunch and a bit of booze and a thank you very much for buying your tractor or your mower or your baler this year, and sort of slowly inquire. The salesman might slowly try and find out where they were. Once we'd had a beer or two, they might have found out where they were in their purchasing for the next year. And that's not to disrespect the show at all, because we're a big believer in shows. We don't do a huge amount. We do, but they're mostly within sort of the shows that work within within the industry, more general, more specific. So there's a show we do in January called LAMA, which is the NEC, and that is a purely agricultural machinery show. So for us, when we want to invest in the show, we want to know that everyone that we see, in theory, because we're not a general, we're just doing mostly John Deere, that in theory cuts out two-thirds, that's a bit of a very basic phrase, of the market. So we want to ensure that the footfall that we get is everyone who's walking is potentially a tractor owner and then potentially a customer. The Lincolnshire Show obviously doesn't produce that. Now, however, saying that, we've just invested in a shop. We're having a bit of a, and by shop, it's, it will be nuts and bolts and grease and a few tools and a few tractor parts. So we are considering attending it next year as a means to generate a bit of traffic into our store. Because 90% of our business was out of the county, we never saw the utility in having a stand. That is changing. So maybe in June next year, you can come and see us. But I do believe in shows. I think that they are a wonderful use of marketing, especially in the age of digital world where we live increasingly digital lives. And obviously, that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, we're still humans. We're still balls of blood and flesh, and we are still social creatures. And I know we're sat here digitally now. There's something to be said in being face to face with somebody, talking to them, and shows give you that opportunity. In regard specifically to the farming industry, I do sympathise with the dealers, because if you're taking a tractor or a combine to the Lincolnshire show, it's a big investment. You've basically got to truck out, tractor, park it up on the plot. You've got to clean it, you've got to wash it, it's got to look spick and span, sit there for a few days, and you've got to truck it back. That's not a small cost, and the assumption is you're not going to sell anything there. That all you're going to do is give away beer and pork pies. You might sell a bit of merchandise and so forth, but it's not probably going to outcost the cost of shipping a combine. For us, where we're in a parts industry, we can run a very smaller stand, and take a van load of parts, take a load of business cards, put our sales team at the front and talk to people. So for us, the shows are always going to be a good investment. And also, you can pretty much judge your marketing there and then, because you talk to people. People are always better face-to-face. They tend to be more truthful, or you get the body language of somebody. Whereas you put an advert in, the farming still works. There's still a lot of farming press and magazines, still very much that print media-driven industry. You can put adverts in the Farmers Weekly or the Farmers Guardian, two very big farming, national press. Do you really know whether they're effective or not? There's a few tricks you can do to obviously make that happen, but you get a lot of bang for your buck for the show. So whilst say we haven't done a Lincolnshire show, I'm a big proponent of it. And when the time comes that there would be a case for us to be there, we definitely look into it. And with our little shop that's developing, then we will, because I still think in this modern world, there is no substitute for getting yourself out there and meeting people.
You shared with us at the start, James, your own career pathway, which could have gone down the route of banking, could have gone into the Royal Navy, could have gone into a whole variety of other bits and pieces. What advice would you give to, firstly, the young James Young, if you could actually go back in time to 18-year-old James, what would you say to him? And also, do you have any advice for current undergraduates who might also be kind of doing degrees that they're kind of doing as a matter of course, and maybe they haven't even thought about the agricultural industries or indeed its subsidiaries as a possible employment area?
So if I was to my 18-year-old self, I would say is follow what you're passionate about. And to give a bit of context, if you'd asked me when I was 8 or 9, 10 years old, what I wanted to be, I said I wanted to be a Formula One driver, and I did have a go-kart racing. I raced against Lewis Hamilton, and I was pretty good. Definitely, I wouldn't have made Formula One level, but I think in another life, if I'd been small, that's another issue. Is I'm 6'4", so I'm not a small person. So you need to be quite small. So physically, I was always. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, I believe that in another life, if I'd been more of a jockey frame, I probably would have had the skills to be a professional racing driver of a smaller formula. So taking aside physical things, that was always my dream. And my advice to myself would be, go pursue something that you have a real passion for, because passion is very much is infectious. And it gives you a work ethic. And I've always said, as an employer now, one thing that I really look for in a person is work ethic. You can teach anybody nearly anything. If you have work ethic, you will get far. And what I find is that when you have passion, and I'm just about young enough to remember what it's like to be a teenager. Probably give me 5 years and I probably will have forgotten. But I know I can just remember what it's like to be a teenager. And you don't have the work ethic. Well, some people do, and most you don't have that work ethic. But what I find is if you have passion for something, you do. So my advice to myself would be go follow what you're passionate about. And generally speaking, that advice would ring true to undergraduates now. Study what you're passionate about and follow what you're passionate about. And if you work hard enough, you will be rewarded. I generally believe that 99 times out of 100, hard work will always be rewarded. Mm. But if you have the passion for it, the hard work will follow. And I've read plenty of books and stories and CEOs, and all of them will pretty much one thing that unites them all is in that time, they worked hard, but they worked hard not because they believed in it, because they enjoyed it. They didn't see it as a job. And so, yeah, follow what you have a passion for, and I think the rest will sort itself out.
How do you relax, James, when you're not actually sort of dealing with the latest sales figures, the accountancy meetings, the general pep talks to government organisations and so on? How do you actually switch off and unwind?
Sport. I still like Formula One. Still, a big Formula One fan. I haven't been to a Grand Prix since COVID, but been to Grand Prix around the world. So watch that. For my sins, I like Test cricket. Not really into any other cricket. I love Test cricket. So when that's on, I'll watch that. Outside of sport, I do a lot of reading. Music. That's why these three music choices were very difficult, because I just listen to music. Eating out, reading, just a lot of self-reflection maybe sometimes, yeah. And something that can a bit of escape. Not too bothered about film or television. I'll watch a bit. People tell me to watch series, but I don't never get into them. But yeah, reading and sport is what I usually chat with. And or I hear about a nice restaurant and I'll drive 3 or 4 hours to try it and be overly critical about it.
But your final choice of music, of course, from the band, you had three number ones. This was their third number one, of course, the other two being Two Tribes and, of course, Relax. It's Frankie Goes to Hollywood. You've gone for The Power of Love. Why in this instance?
Well, I don't see it. I know many people see this as a Christmas song. So I think everyone's, because we're recording this just before Christmas, everyone will think I've chosen this as a Christmas song.
They could all have been Christmas songs, James. You could have had Morrissey,
I'm undenied about that, but I thought, no, I had this opportunity to choose three songs on a radio station. I have to do it properly. And I think that there's no other song in the world that describes the power of love better than this one. I mean, you know, love is probably the biggest song, the biggest theme of any pop song. And I genuinely believe that this song describes how I define love. And it has a personal connection to me, which I'm not going to share on this interview. But it's also something that I have a personal.
Have you met the Hooded Claw? Have you met the Hooded Claw and Penelope Pitstop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it has a personal connection to me, but beyond that, it defines love to me better than any other song has done. And maybe there is another one, but I haven't heard it yet. If it is.
Well, James, it's been awesome connecting with your good self today. Of course, people wish to actually find out a bit about Nick Young Tractor Parts, of course, nytractorparts.co.uk, presumably the best place to actually go.
Yes, we do have a Facebook page, also Nick Young Tractor Parts. We have Twitter, NYTP Sales. We're not the most active on social media, I will admit, but that will be changing soon. We will have Instagram and TikTok in the some distant future, but our social media is probably a bit, in the modern age, a bit slow, but we're catching up. But we've always been busy other things, but we're on there. You can follow me on Instagram, JWYoung11. There's a bit of work on there as well. So, yeah, come check us out.
Fantastic. And, of course, X is still there, despite Elon Musk doing his very best to actually get the company junked in all sorts of ways. But that's for another time.
Elon, yeah.
But for the moment, two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting and satisfying interview with us on this, your first experience of Siren Radio's Business Matters?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
So can we prevail upon you to, again, join us possibly in the studio and actually sort of take part again in another show in the not too distant future?
Definitely, yeah. I live in the city. I can walk. So, yes, it's definitely be up for it.
Fantastic. James Young, Managing Director of NY Tractors, of course, NY Tractor Parts, to be precise, NY Tractor Parts. Huge thanks. And keep on keeping on. Here's Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Feels like fire. I'm so in love with you. Purge the soul. Make love your goal. The power of love, a force from above, cleaning my soul. Flame on, burn desire, love with tongues of fire, purge the soul. Make love your goal. I'll protect you from the hooded claw. Keep the vampires from your door. Chips are down, I'll be around with my undying, death-defying love for you. Envy will hurt itself. Let yourself be beautiful. Sparkling love, flowers and pearls and pretty girls. Love is like an energy. Of love, a force from above.
Now, we know that Chris Rea once had a major hit with Driving Home for Christmas, which obviously gets recycled very much at this time of the year. But what about the importance of checking that you're in good and ship-shape manner to actually get on the roads? Well, the AA and the emergency services are encouraging the public to download What Three Words before driving this winter and to actually talk us through the importance of this and how technology is obviously assisting in terms of the driving experience. We're delighted to welcome the president of the AA, the wonderful Edmund King. How are you, Edmund?
Very well indeed, Alex, and good to join you.
Excellent. Well, I've just renewed my 37th year of membership for the AA, so there we are. Perfect. Bit of product endorsement from that point of view. Had one or two sort of slight ups and downs where I've kind of been a little bit disappointed with the range of time taken to actually connect with the whole thing, but nothing that's kind of meant me want to actually rescind my membership and say that's it, I've had enough. However, for those people who are traveling this year, unfortunately I'm not for a change, it looks as though once again post-pandemic you really need to be prepared for inclement weather, particularly given the upcoming forecasts.
Well, indeed, at this time of year, we know that traffic on the road is going to be busier. The weather is quite changeable. So the main advice to drivers is really plan ahead. Prepare yourselves, prepare your car, prepare for the journey. And one of the things that the AA we have found is that about 40% of drivers, when they do break down, they struggle to actually describe where they are. They might say, oh, I've just passed a pub, I've seen a field on the right, there's a forest on the left. But that's not really very helpful for our contact center. So this is why we're saying, particularly at this busy period, particularly for people doing long journeys, if you download the app, What Three Words, it's free of charge. And what it basically does, it divides the world into 3 meter squares. So if you break down in the wilds of Lincolnshire and you don't know where you are, by just pressing on the app, it will give 3 words that are unique words that will describe where you are. And what that means is that RAA patrols can then pinpoint exactly where that person has broken down. And it's interesting because even if you're in a motorway service area, sometimes it's quite difficult for our patrols to find the vehicle because there are thousands of cars there. So again, by giving the What Three Word code, it actually pinpoints exactly where that car is. So it's used by the AA, it's used by 85% of emergency services, and particularly if you have a collision, if there are injuries, obviously time is of the essence. So yeah, it's a great device, and we advocate people download it before they set out on these Christmas journeys.
Yeah, the average journey, it would seem, would be about 58 miles for people who are driving by Christmas. there are some fundamentals, of course, that may seem kind of blindingly obvious to many folk, but I think probably needs to be addressed in terms of what things you should take with you in terms of preparing for a long journey, such as hot drinks, blankets, and so on.
Yeah, this might seem basic advice, but those of us with long memories can think back to the time, for example, on the M11 in heavy snow some 10, 15 years ago, when drivers were actually trapped for over 14 hours. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen all the time, but it is best to be prepared. Quite often, the AA will turn up to an emergency breakdown where someone is, and the people are out of the car, which is good advice, particularly if it's on a busy road, but they've got no coats, they've got no scarves, you know, because they're relying on the heating in their car. So, you know, simple little tips is to put a decent coat in the car, to have a fluorescent vest. Mainly, it's best to actually have that in the car under the driver's seat or something, because in an emergency situation, you don't want to always be getting out, opening the boot, trying to find the vest. So that should be kept in the car. But also for the kids at this time of year, making sure they've got plenty of water to drink, making sure that they've got games to play, making sure that there is some food in case you do get stuck. I mean, all our predictions show that Saturday, the 23rd of December, will be the busiest on the roads with about 16.4 million trips. But also Friday is going to be very busy with just over 16 million. And then on Sunday, even though it is Christmas Eve, there will be about 30% of people who are still doing their shopping. So if you're doing a journey on Christmas Eve and you're passing by a city or shopping centre, it's likely to be busier there as well.
I was quite staggered to see that over half of UK adults have admitted they don't check the weather before heading out on a long drive. I mean, I know we might not have faith in our meteorological cousins, but really, that seems to be a kind of, again, a fairly standard thing to do, especially at this time of year.
Well, particularly when people have got choices of when they do travel. And this Christmas, the way Christmas Day falls on a Monday means that people have got more choices. It's not all linked to getting there the day before because you've got a weekend the day before. It's not all linked to when you're working or when schools are out. So people do have a choice. So the things we would actually advocate before you set off, you know, one, you can check the travel, whether it's on your local radio station or indeed on things like AA Route Planner, it will tell you where congestion is. And two, check the weather, because if you have got a choice of actually traveling later when the rain has stopped, there's no thunder, etc., obviously you will have a much more pleasant and potentially safer journey. So yeah, as well as being prepared yourselves, as well as your car being prepared, do check and prepare for those external factors.
And as we've mentioned, obviously downloading What Three Words can, in the event of an emergency, actually help with your location. Although I see that nearly a third of us don't trust that our sat navs will actually guide them to the correct location. Is this just a natural fear of technology, Edmund?
Well, indeed, I think some people do, though, forget what it was like before they had sat navs. And
we used a map. We used the AA maps. That was what I used to use.
No, absolutely. Me here. You had to meticulously check your journey because you had to remember that, you know, you were using the A1 to Junction 14, then you were then cutting across. So, yes, people would use their maps. They'd potentially write down the individual roads where they would
change. Print out the AA route planner that you'd actually download from the internet. That's what I'd do as well.
Well, indeed. I'm old enough to remember my father actually using the AA route planner when we lived in Norwich, and you used to get a typed out route that was sent from AA headquarters that said, take the A11.
Exactly.
So yes, I mean, obviously, sat-navs can help. But again, where you're broken down, even with the sat-nav, sometimes it's quite hard to pinpoint exactly where you are. And that's where What Three Words can help, particularly if you are in a remote area. Mm. I mean, just very quickly, last week, I had to go to a large park to pick up some small saplings, some small trees that were, you know, 5-10 inches long. And the instructions were they'd be by the park ranger's lodge in a black bin. When I got there, there was no black bin. And I looked and I looked and I looked. They'd also given a What Three Words location. So I've got What Three Words on my phone. So I just put in those three words and it pinpointed me exactly to a white sack on the ground in the middle of nowhere with these saplings in. You know, absolutely perfect. So that technology, at least we know it does work. 85% of emergency services use it because they know how important it is, particularly after a crash. The first hour after a crash is called the golden hour. If anyone's injured, it is essential that the emergency services get there quickly. And if people are injured, to stabilize them and get them to hospital. And knowing that location really does help. So, yeah, a seasonable bit of advice. Get yourselves a free Christmas present. Download What Three Words.
Very sage words indeed. Edmund King, president of the AA, many thanks indeed. And have a great holiday season. And keep on keeping on, Edmund. Hope we'll speak again in 2024.
And same to you and all your listeners. Thank you.